And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
And just like that, there are four teams remaining in the Stanley Cup playoffs, brought to you by our good friends over at Skip. Hello and welcome to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. It is Nick Alberga joined alongside Pete Jensen for a conference finals preview show. And Pete, just as we expected, the four teams we all saw coming, right?
Definitely some new blood here. And Skip, of course, the official food delivery app of the NHL. But the Florida Panthers, the Dallas Stars, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm excited to see some of these non-traditional markets make it this far. And of course, some of them, right, like the Florida Panthers, we saw the spark they got from the All-Star game this past year. The Hurricanes had an outdoor game, and they've all been jiving here in the postseason. It's been so much fun to watch, man.
I love these underdog storylines. And with that in mind, we bring in our underdog, Michael Leboff, my man. I got to ask you off the top, that Seattle-Dallas over was hitting like crazy. Then game seven comes and the goaltending steps up.
Yeah, it's a trend that we've kept track of at Action Network for quite some time, which is the game seven unders in actually both the NBA and NHL, but the NHL, it's just much more stark and it comes through right away. And you could just tell in the first 10 minutes, like how the game's going to be played. And you're like, oh, this one is just going to fly under. I know Darren Rovell texted me. He said, should I just bet no goal in the first 10 or bet the under? And I was like, just do both. Cause if you're not going to get a goal in the first 10, you're going to, you know, hit both. And he ended up with a nice night, but I think that kind of was what I expected that game seven to look like. Rope hints continues to be the story. He shortened from 20-1 pre game seven to win the Conn Smythe. He's now down to 9-1. I actually think the only reason he's not the favorite is because the Stars aren't the betting favorite to win the Stanley Cup. But let's say they win game one against Vegas, they might become the betting favorite, and then Hintz will become the Conn Smythe favorite. So it's still wide open. And that's been the theme of this playoffs. And I think you can make an argument for anybody to win this thing. And that's reflected in the odds. Usually by this point, we have someone as an odds on favorite, meaning they have a minus sign in front of their price rather than a plus sign. Last year we saw Colorado. I can't remember the exact price they were ahead of the conference final, but they were odds on, and not this time. This, you know, the numbers are short. I don't think there's much betting value in terms of like a Stanley Cup future, but Carolina plus 200, Vegas plus 225, Stars plus 325, Panthers plus 375. So everybody's between 2-1 and 4-1. That kind of just tells you what we're dealing with here. It's quite interesting.
And we could talk all about the surprising Florida Panthers, and we'll get to them. But the Golden Knights, Mike, have also been a big surprise. And I feel like they're always betting darlings when they get deeper into the postseason, right? What, four of their first six seasons, they've reached the conference final or deeper. Pretty remarkable. So they're back here with Bruce Cassidy. And they were able to slow down to an extent and certainly contain at 5-on-5 the Edmonton Oilers with McDavid and Draisaitl. So if we're talking about high flying off the rush, Roope Hintz, the speed, I mean, they have a chance to contain him as well, right? So Vegas has to be maybe the second biggest surprise of this postseason among the remaining teams now that Seattle's out.
Yeah, it's funny that I think they are. I think Vegas and Carolina, you could kind of put in the same category, which was, you know, teams that had terrific regular seasons, and then everybody kind of just patted them on the head and was like, all right, that was fun, but there's no way you're getting through this gauntlet for different reasons. Vegas, just because they were going to have to go through, you know, tough Edmonton Oilers team, and then either Dallas or Colorado, as most people saw it. And for Carolina, it was the injuries. But if you had told people, you know, in October, would you be surprised if Carolina and Vegas were in the Final Four? I don't think anybody would say, yeah, I'd be, you know, pretty shocked. But it's funny how your just biases get completely shifted during a regular season and then the playoffs. I couldn't believe, you know, I'm kicking myself a lot for just completely counting out the Knights because the numbers were still pretty good on them, you know, even the midseason. And then when the Oilers got hot, they, even though the Knights won the division, like they were a very significant underdog every game on Edmonton Ice this series. And they were the underdog at home, you know, not a huge one, but they were an underdog every game in that series. So pretty wild story that a team, like you said, that's now made four out of six conference finals in their history was an underdog every game in a playoff series one that they had home ice advantage. So I do think, though, you know, we were talking, Nick and I and producer Bob were just talking about this off air. I do think that Vegas now, the narrative will shift a little bit. They go from being this pesky underdog to probably being a little overpriced against Dallas, because it's a coin flip series in my mind. And Vegas, I mean, Dallas holds the trump card, which is the goaltending advantage here. All credit to Aiden Hill for the way he stepped in for Laurent Brossoit. But whether it was Hill, Brossoit, Jonathan Quick, Robin Leonard, Logan Thompson, whoever else Vegas has played in goal this season, I think they might have got Ken Reggett in there once. But there's a significant advantage for Dallas in the goal, even if Jake Oettinger was not himself for most of that series.
It really has been that type of postseason. When you look at Aiden Hill and his 934 save percentage against the Edmonton Oilers, starting the year, Aiden Hill was the fourth string netminder for this Vegas Golden Knights team. A couple things stick out in that conference final in the West, the Pete DeBoer revenge narrative. Love that. Love to hop on that. Fired on May 16, 2022. So he's playing his former team. In fact, three of the last four teams leave off remaining are formerly coached by Pete DeBoer, currently coached by Pete DeBoer. So something Pete DeBoer is going to win this year, I think.
Isn't that nuts? That just like that, the coaching, the goalies, like all the kind of carouseling that went on in the offseason, and this is where we end up with, you know, even like you want to put Bruce Cassidy, Paul Maurice, like,
yeah,
three coaches that shifted jobs and three coaches that were, you know, they're on their at least their third NHL coaching gig. Head coaching gig. Then you have a journeyman goalie in Aiden Hill on one side, Freddie Anderson. Like, come on, he's been the butt of how many jokes for everybody, right? Like, this is, and then Bob. Like, if pre playoffs, if I asked you guys what is the most immovable contract in the NHL, I think it's changed now because there's someone in Toronto. It might be, but you would have taken Bob, right? Like, so the kind of you know, storylines we're dealing with here, it's not just the teams being surprising, but it's just like the people that are leading them to these spots as well. It's quite interesting. It's made for some crazy betting. And I'm sure there's somebody out there that, you know, got lucky and kind of nailed this chaos narrative. And, you know, whether it's in a pool, a big pool that they just went completely against the grain, or with some betting stuff that's sitting really pretty right now. We'll see like a ticket come up as we get to the Stanley Cup final, where there's someone going to be standing to win a lot of money because they absolutely nailed this thing.
And Sergei Bobrovsky came in mid-series against the Bruins, and he's 7-2 since with a .918 save percentage. So in my opinion, like, if Bob keeps this going, if you look at Conn Smythe front runners at this point in time, with all due respect to Matthew Tkachuk, I mean, I think like a more surprising story that might warm up to the voters could be Bobrovsky, a guy that everybody has knocked at one time or another. Despite his regular season success, his postseason play was not very good coming into this season for his career at large. But I mean, this is a guy that has shifted it to, oh yeah, upset special first round. Okay, now this is a serious cup contender because Bob has his act together. And that team just looks like they're on a mission right now, Nick.
Yeah, that's exactly it. 4-1 in round two, 1.89 and 943. And I was going to spiral off that and ask Leboff about, like, who do you think is actually a logical threat to win the Conn Smythe Trophy? We mentioned Roope Hintz. Like, I tried to have a couple guys per team. Sebastian Aho, Brent Burns, Jordan Martinuk had a good second round. Tkachuk, Bobrovsky, Hintz, Pavelski, Eichel, Stone. Am I missing anybody else?
So I think you've pretty much nailed the contenders. That was a pretty long list, but I'm sitting on a Tkachuk ticket. We talked about this before round two, that I thought Tkachuk was a great bet. I'm a little upset with how well Bob played. I mean, he was outrageous, but you're asking him to play at a really high level to continue that form. And we'll see if he can, you know, I think even like a little bit of a slip, and if Tkachuk can have a big series, I think Tkachuk will end up, you know, catching him if Florida does do the goods. I think it's right now it's got to be Hintz. I think you can maybe make a case that Oettinger, you know, would have stood a better chance to win the award had they played Edmonton in this round, you know, because when you're playing the Oilers, who do you need to step up? You need your goalie to step up rather than, you know, just, you know, someone like Hintz. But he's just been outstanding. But there are a couple long shots then on the other teams that I think still you can make a case for sprinkling. Jacob Slavin for Carolina. I think just the way the Hurricanes spread their scoring around, I'm not totally convinced that Aho should be this short right now. Sure, he can get there. And I know he's got 10 points in 11 games, but he was pretty quiet against the Devils. Obviously, that became the Jordan Martinook show, which I'm sure everybody knew was coming.
Yes.
And then, so if you look at their scoring chart right now, there's like 11 guys between 8 and 11 points on Carolina. And the narrative with Carolina is so much we over me, like score by committee, all this, you know, kind of teamwork, you know, cliche kind of stuff. And Slavin is going to draw some really tough assignments. I think you can maybe make the same argument for Jordan Staal. And so he'll be facing a lot of that Kachuk line in this series coming up. Then whoever he plays, whether it be Eichel or the Roope Hintz line in the Stanley Cup, should they continue, like he'll be charged with shutting them down. We'll see. I know Freddie Anderson's under 10 to 1. I don't know if we'll see Freddie Anderson play every game in the series, just with the way that goaltending kind of works in Carolina as well. So I think that Carolina is one team that I would maybe say that you can circle a couple long shots. You can maybe make a case for Vegas. I think Jack Eichel is the clear favorite right now. But if he gets, you know, he'll go through these kind of ups and downs in a regular season where he goes quiet. He was spectacular against the Oilers. I'm not taking that away from him, but you can maybe make a case that Jonathan Marchessault, now that he's heated up a little bit, is interesting at 30 to 1. You can maybe, if you really want to get interesting, it's Chandler Stephenson, but that's the only other one. That's the only other one I could think. You know, Stone is too short. If Mark Stone's winning the award, it means he's just gone completely off, and you know, tip your cap. But Carolina is the one team I think that still has a very interesting kind of race for who their Conn Smythe Award winner is if they win. So that's the one team I would circle. Whether it's Staal, Slavin, you want to go somewhere else in the middle six, Seth Jarvis, however you want to do. Someone, they'll need someone to get hot every series. And it was Martinook last series. It was Aho against the Islanders. So we'll see who it is this time around.
You never know. What if Martinook has a point per game from now to the rest of the way? He might lead them in scoring. You could see something wild like that if they end up winning it all. I'm looking at the intrigue. If you're a San Jose Sharks fan, you can maybe bet on Joe Pavelski or Brent Burns to hoist the trophy, the longtime guys that have been through the rigors. How about Joe Pavelski? Has a Conn Smythe winner in history ever missed like a full round? Because if anyone has, then Joe Pavelski should be alive in the Conn Smythe trophy mix, right? With eight goals in the second round.
The problem is Hintz has just been so good. Hintz is going to end up leading if he continues playing like this. And if Pavelski scores, a lot of that's going to come from Hintz, right? Yeah. Like, I think Pavelski has the narrative going for him more than you could say Hintz. But to that point, right? Like, we didn't see any of Aiden Hill in the first round, and he's now 22 to 1 to win the Conn Smythe, which is an insane number. Sure. And then you can even kind of talk about Bobrovsky. He wasn't the starter coming out of the gates. As well, and Freddie Anderson. Like, these are all three guys who are among the favorites to win the award now, and they weren't on anybody's radar to start the postseason. So it just goes to show you we're now, what, like a month into the postseason, how quickly things change, and these guys just come out of nowhere. So when we do these preseason or these pre-playoff previews and we're saying that kind of stuff, it's true. Like, you do your best to kind of map it out, and then the Panthers come back from 3-1 against the Bruins, and everybody's got to recalibrate.
So let's dive now into these respective series, and we'll start with the Western Conference. I think there's so much intrigue from so many sides. Obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights, the betting favorite over the Dallas Stars in that series right now. A couple of things I'm looking at. Jason Robertson at some point in time has to break loose. No goals in round two. He's got two goals in the playoffs, both on the power play, 46 tucks in the regular season. You mentioned Jonathan Marchessault, 34 shots on goal in six games against Edmonton. Maybe you target the 3.5 number when it comes to the shot prop in that series. Aiden Hill's been money in the bank. How would you handicap that series, Leboff?
Yeah, so I like Dallas, as I always said. I think that they're a fine bet as a you know small underdog to win the series, to win game one. This is a team that the goaltending should be the difference, their biggest edge. I think if you looked at these two rosters and you put the goalies aside, you'd say, okay, pretty even. And then you threw a top 10 goalie in Jake Oettinger on one side, and then all due respect to Aiden Hill, like I said, he's been really good, but you throw a kind of journeyman backup in on the other, you'd say, well, it should tilt towards Dallas for sure. And that's my thinking. Nick Martin on my co-host on Line Change had a nice long shot to lead this series in goals that I like too. I like Nick Waugh. He's 65-1. He's getting some good usage up there in the top six. And this series, like Vegas is a 5-on-5 team more than anything else. So I don't think you need to worry about a guy not featuring all that much on the power play in this market for that team. It's a little different for Dallas with Hintz, Pavelski, and Robertson. Like you'd imagine one of those three guys would be the leader if the Stars end up winning the series and they do it quickly. That said, I do think that if you wanted to talk about one Stars long shot, I could listen to Evgeny Dadonov at 45-1. I think he's been pretty good. He does get looks on the power play. The Stars aren't particularly, like, they're not going to shorten the bench so much like you'd see a team like Edmonton do, where they'll just ride that top line and forget about everybody else. So Dadonov will still be playing. And he's that middle six for Dallas has been, they've been working it. So I like his number at 45-1. If you're going to pick one Star, but if you're going to just make one, I would go with Waugh at 65.
Hey, I like that look. Just to interject, Evgeny Dadonov, former Vegas Golden Knight. They tried to trade him to the Anaheim Ducks, Pete. We're unsuccessful at that. Remember that?
Yeah, that was ancient history, but he's going to have a little revenge narrative attached to his name without question. And then a couple other diamonds in the rough in terms of the Dallas Stars that I wanted to mention. What a huge goal for Wyatt Johnston. This is a guy that led, tied for the rookie lead in the regular season in goals, and really stepped up against the Kraken and Beniers, and maybe he's the best rookie of the season. So, look for him to keep this momentum going in his first season. And then Max Domi very quietly is tied for the NHL lead in even strength points this postseason after a monster second round. And that's the type of depth scoring, the secondary scoring, right, Mike, that Dallas is going to need to match what Vegas is having going on with, you know, Eichel on one line and Stone on the other line. And then the third line has a little golden misfits connection, right, with Carlson and Riley Smith. Riley Smith has, I think, another gear to reach with some of his tough luck so far. But Dallas secondary scorers are going to need to come to play here.
Yeah, so Johnston is another long shot I like in a different market. And this one is, you should not expect to win this at all, but he's 100-1 to lead this series in points. You need a lot to go right for that to happen. And you need it to be a pretty short Dallas series win. In all likelihood, you need him to have one monster game. But I think when you parlay those things together, you can talk yourself into 100-1, especially now, like you said, he just scored a huge goal that should hopefully carry into this series. And if you're expecting Mark Stone, especially in the Vegas home games, to see a lot of that first line, there's maybe some room on the ice for Wyatt Johnston to do something special. So I don't hate 100-1 on basically anybody. And he's obviously sparkled in that series. So why not?
So let's get to the Eastern Conference final. And first and foremost, I want to shout out David Satriano. As far as I remember, the only person who forecasted a Carolina Stanley Cup. They're two rounds through. I believe he had Brent Burns to win his Conn Smythe trophy, but they've been an exceptional story. Nobody expected them to be here with all the injuries, but how would you handicap this series? Cause it's so fascinating, right? Like you have two underdogs hypothetically going head to head, and one's got to win, one's got to lose, unfortunately.
Yeah. I look at this one pretty similarly to what I looked at with New Jersey and Carolina, which I thought New Jersey would put up more of a fight later in the series, but it takes a little bit to adjust to how Carolina plays. Like you're going to need to, they are an outlier in compared to basically every other team in the NHL. Nobody tries to play this all action, man on man, aggressive forecheck, pressure the puck in every inch of the ice way that Carolina does. It's psychotic, frankly. And it takes time. Like think about what the Panthers just dealt with Toronto. Like what was the biggest kind of, criticism of the Leafs in that series, which was they were just way too passive. And now you're going to step on the ice against a team that is not even in their dictionary. So it'll take some time. I like Florida generally though in the series, but I'm going to play them to come from behind. I'll wait after game one. I'll wait till game three to play them. We know how good Carolina is at home. I think that Florida, I mean, Carolina is a favorite in game one. It's not a huge number, but I'd expect them to win that one. And if they do, I think I'll start betting into Florida. I would probably do it again if Florida goes down 2-1, you know, even 3-2, because we know that this team has comebacks in them. And we know that they're a type of team that they don't really need many opportunities to make it count on the scoreboard. They're very clinical. That forward group is terrific. And Carolina is kind of the opposite. I know that didn't really show against the Devils. They were scoring at will. But normally you'd think Carolina needs to work really hard to score. Like, they generate so many shot attempts every game at 5-on-5, and they just bank on, you know, quantity over quality compared to other teams. So I think that Florida's match will have some issues matching up right out of the gates, but eventually I hope that the Panthers will be able to kind of claw their way back, and the Cardiac Cats, you know, pull off another comeback. And that's how I think there's some value. I do think there's some props too that we can get into after we hear Pete's thoughts.
Right. And I think for Carolina, I think this is probably going to go 7 this series. It's one of the biggest toss-ups I can remember in trying to pick it. I am going Florida in 7, but the return of Tara Vinen gives them a serious lift if they need the finishing department, right? Like, they've gotten a lot of big goals from Martinook and Jesper Fast and some of these no-name guys, frankly, with all due respect to them. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think they'd be able to get this far with this cast of characters outside of Sebastian Aho, but Jarvis steps up one game, then Martinook, let's just do a round of applause here. He was tied for the NHL lead in the second round with 10 points, tied with Connor McDavid. So if Jordan Martinook can do that, then almost anybody left in the playoffs that's playing on a first or second or third line has a glimmer at those type of series bets, right, Nick?
Oh, just simply incredible. And you need guys to step up. And that's the you know, incredible part about this whole Carolina run. Again, no Svechnikov, no Pacioretty, Tara Vinen, it's been out of the mix for the majority. You need guys to elevate and play stronger. And to get that type of output from a guy like Martinook, who is primarily a bottom six guy, I think is the real story for me. The goaltending has been great. And again, it's weird to say, but I think the back end is very underrated. So there's a couple of things, Liboff, I'm looking at in that series. Matthew Tkachuk somehow goalless against the Maple Leafs. I still thought his DNA was all over that series. You mentioned the shots on goal from Carolina's perspective. I would attack the Bobrovsky saves prop in that series. And I'm just looking forward to the whole Paul Maurice, you know, stall versus stall narrative as well. Like, I mean, there's a lot of DNA to go around in this series.
Yeah, the Bobrovsky saves prop is another one. That's like another Nick Martin special. There's a couple of sports books out there that will let you bet alternate totals on saves. So you can move the number to like 38.5, 43.5. And you can get some really big numbers on that. And I think that there's a likelihood that one of these games goes to overtime, right? At least one in a long series. And you could be looking at what Bobrovsky kind of saw against Toronto, and you can bet like the over 49.5 saves for Sergei Bobrovsky. And you'll be looking at like at least 40-1. A lot of times in the regular season, those numbers are like 50-1. So I'm going to be looking at that number all series long and playing with his alternate totals. The prop market, I bet this guy before the Leafs series with the Panthers, and I'm going to tell you that bet was a lot closer than the 300-1 number that I played. That was Nick Cousins to lead the series in scoring. He scored the first and the last goal of the series. I think he hit a post or two. He had a chance, especially because I think the leader ended up being Carter Verhaeghe at 4. So a couple of bounces go Nick Cousins' way, and you guys would have never heard from me again. But he's 150-1 to lead this series in scoring. I'll be right back on that one, because like Pete said, the Martinook kind of narrative looms large. You look at the list on both of these teams. Yeah, there's some star power here, especially on the Florida side. But you can really find a path for anybody that's getting decent minutes to lead this series in goals. And when you look at the prices, like Jesse Puljujärvi, all due respect, he's listed as a shorter number than Cousins. Aaron Ekblad is half of the price of Cousins. Eric Staal is also half his price. So when you're kind of like going through and you're looking for the best price, I think you end up on Cousins, for me at least. And then on the Hurricane side, I was hoping to get a bigger number on someone like Seth Jarvis, but the only other one that I have any like slight interest in is I shouldn't say that. Like I kind of like Nason at 18. He's a decent price, but the only other one is Jack Drury. We'll see what I want to see what like they're showing in practice, but Jack Drury's 160-1 and he was getting, you know, top 6 minutes with regularity against the Islanders until the injury. We know that the scoring depth is an issue with Carolina, so when you have someone like that with the pedigree, a young player that can kind of spark, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some decent, you know, usage against the Panthers in the series if he plays. So those are the guys that I like. But that Cousins bet, man, I'll be right back on that one. That's probably my favorite one of all the props heading into a series.
Definitely under the radar and scored that huge overtime goal to put the Panthers onto the next round. So. And then one other guy that I think is underrated and has come a long way this particular season, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, right? 5 points in 5 games in the second round against the Devils. They finished that thing early. I thought New Jersey had better center depth than they did, but New Jersey was gone in a hurry. And then now you could look and say, Sam Bennett's healthy. He's a grinder. Alexander Barkov is a beast on the other line. If they're going to be hanging around, they're probably going to need to lock those two guys down, which they're capable of, and they're going to need Kotkaniemi to chip in some scoring. Kotkaniemi had 3 points in 3 games against Florida in the regular season. So he's a guy that's just been doing it behind the scenes a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see him near the top of the goals or points leaderboard when it's all said and done here.
Yeah, he's 19-1. He was another one we mentioned on Line Change as someone we were thinking about, but his number, it got too short. But he is like the way I would play Kotkaniemi, like you said, he could rack up a ton of points pretty quickly, especially if his matchups aren't terrible. And he's 45-1 to lead the series in points. So rather than go with the goals, I would go with the points with him. And I think you can make the same case for a couple defensemen in this series that might just end up racking, you know, if it's the Carolina power play just kind of catches on, you could see maybe Brent Burns or whatever, but he's 17-1 to lead the series in point. But then there's a super long shot out there in that two defensemen, one for each team, that I think could be just a, you know, $10 bet for some fun, and that's Gostis Bear, who's been pretty quiet in the series, but we know that he can get pretty hot pretty quickly. And if it, once again, you're banking on this being a short series, if you bet these numbers, 300-1 on Gostis Bear is fine. I could, you know, it's a 300-1 bet for a reason. And the same thing with Gus Forsling. He's a guy that has much more, I think, offensive upside than we get to see because of the way that Brandon Montour kind of came on the scene in this season. So he doesn't get the big power play time at all anymore. But Forsling, to me, in a short series, you could see him having one of those crazy games where he's got like 3 assists and all of a sudden you're looking, you know, for a 300-1 bet, you're getting a pretty good sweat out of it.
If you're looking at each of these series, we've already mentioned a couple of these names. Like you were saying, Nick, that Dallas needs more from Robertson, who had 109 points in the regular season and is hurting in the goal department. I think Vegas needs more from its top two defensemen with Petrangelo and Theodore both having no goals so far. And then when you look in the East, you know, you can look at a guy like Aaron Ekblad. I think I know you were just mentioning Forsling. But Ekblad is a guy that has had a high ceiling in years past, right? And they haven't gotten very much from him to this point in the playoffs. And that's a good thing because you can reach another level when you're a surprise team and maybe one of your bigger name players has been quiet so far. Any of those type of guys jump out for you, Nick, besides the ones that we've mentioned so far?
Yeah, so I think from a Florida perspective, Gustav Forsling is a guy I'm sort of looking at to really elevate his game. Brandon Montour, I thought, was decent in the second round, better in the first round, but he's certainly a guy I'm looking at from a Florida perspective as well. Just to wrap, Leboff, I have a couple questions. Rest versus rust when it comes to game one, Carolina and Florida. And how are you tackling the totals in that series, in both series, quite frankly?
So I actually like the over in Carolina and Florida. This is something we discussed as well on Line Change, that Let's just think about what Sergei Bobrovsky has done the past couple of weeks here. The Bruins, like the end of that Bruins series, he was terrific. And then he completely caught fire. I think by some metrics had his best 5-game stretch in his entire NHL career in that series against Toronto. I think some of that was kind of inflated by that game 2 numbers that these models kind of they don't really capture the nuance sometimes of what was going on in that game with the Leafs. You know, they were down a couple goals late and threw a ton of scoring chances on him. So it did inflate his numbers a little bit. But regardless, he was, you know, the star of round two. I think the best player for any team in round two was Sergei Bobrovsky. Is he going to keep that level up? I don't think so. And that's not saying that he's going to be bad, but he's probably going to fall off a little bit. He's not going to be a, you know, 8 goals saved above expected or whatever he posted in that Maple Leaf series again, or it'll be unlikely. And if he does, you know, you tip your cap and you still kind of feel okay that you played into the percentages here. So with the how much rubber Carolina throws at the net, Bobrovsky, the one thing that I noticed, especially in that Bruins series, was he doesn't control his rebounds all that much. He's such a you know, kind of shifty guy, and he's so, there's so much going on in the crease with him when he's in goal. Those rebounds would be scooped up by the Hurricanes with how much they just pump towards the net. And that Florida defense, the fact that Bobrovsky played so well and his numbers were so terrific tells you that they were giving up plenty of scoring chances. So I think that, you know, there's a little bit of a suspect defense. The goaltending should step down a little bit. Plus, you know, on the other side, you can still ask questions of Freddie Anderson in goal. We know that he's not someone that you're going to wake up in the morning and feel pretty confident that A, he's going to play, and B, that he's going to stop 95% of the shots that he sees every night, right? So I think that most people are going to look the opposite with the way that Florida and the Florida Leaf series went with all the unders with two high-powered offenses. Everybody thought that was going to be an over series. And Carolina is just an under team, generally speaking. Like, that's the narrative around them. So I like the over in that series. The other one, I got to wait and see, because let's give Aiden Hill a couple more games. I want to see how, honestly, Jake Ottinger, like, he had, would you say, 2 stellar games in that series? And then the rest were duds. So we got to see what he's doing. I'll wait and see on that one. But, you know, I'm just okay with betting Dallas on the money line rather than the totals in Stars and Knights.
One concern with Dallas, so when Haskinen got banged up, I was a little concerned about them moving on just because their defense is a little top heavy in terms of having him or not having him. He's super important to that team. And then just in general, like, they have that kind of Edmonton sickness where they're losing way too many games and they're a lead in bouncing back, but eventually, right, the clock runs out on that type of a trend, right? Dallas is like 5-0 following a loss this postseason, thanks largely to Ottinger. He had that one shutout, right, against the Wild. Remember, even that series, things were looking pretty bleak at one point or another, so early on. So I'm just like, that's my only concern with Dallas is, like, can they actually get into the driver's seat more often in these series? I think they're going to need to do that. If they do that, it could be a shorter series, but if they get into these games they've been playing lately and maybe an injury or two, they could be toast.
To wrap, let's go around the horn, and Pete, we'll start with you, and apologies for my voice for everybody listening. Who do you have to win these respective series? I have Dallas and Florida, guys.
I got Dallas in 6 and Florida in 7. Dallas, I was high on at the start of the playoffs. Carolina, it's tough to keep picking against those guys because they're so resilient. It doesn't matter who's on the ice for them. They play that type of brand. Like you said, we were all high on them in the preseason. So if you're a Carolina fan, you're probably like, what the heck is up with Pete? Like, he had Carolina in the preseason. Now he doesn't pick them every round. So I am giving a lot of respect to that team. But I will go with Florida. I feel like it's a team of destiny, and I just think they have a little bit more scoring punch.
Yeah, I think just looking at it betting wise, like I said, I'm going to be betting on Dallas to win that series, and I'm going to be betting Florida most likely after game one. We'll see how that one goes. But I do think that one thing I just want to mention is I think that one of these series, because everyone expects them to be really tight, I think one of them, it's worth betting the series under because there's just going to be value going like under 5.5 games or one of the teams to win in a sweep. That's something I always like to tell people before betting into series is all three of us kind of are in agreement that these look like 6 or 7 game series, but that right away is going to throw some value on going the opposite. So make sure you take a look at those numbers as well, because this has been a playoff of everybody being wrong, and it wouldn't be surprising if we were all wrong once again.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So unpredictable, utter chaos so far here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So many thanks to Michael Leboff, for Pete Jensen, producer Bob Bender. I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.